About 10 o'clock that night, we got a phone call from fire people to say that Omeo was going to be engulfed in 2 hours.
Smoke was getting thicker and thicker, and then out of the smoke, a helicopter came.
I wouldn't have missed experience for the world. No one at 85 is going to invite you to come and hop on a Black Hawk.
You're listening to From the Embers, a series that dives deep into the lived experiences of 9 Australian communities on the front lines of the 2019-2020 bushfires. I'm Sarah Mashman. Large tracts of forest line the Great Alpine Road. Dipping down into the Omeo Valley, the land opens into grassy meadows. Omeo is the kind of community where people don't just wave when they pass you in the street. They'll stop for a chat and ask you round for tea.
We're a small town of about 400 people, but the district's probably around 1,200 people. Omeo itself runs a lot of big events, the show, the rodeo, and I think that's part of living in a small community is that you're someone and that you contribute to those sorts of things.
Natalie O'Connell's contribution ended up extending beyond the town boundaries. In 2016, she stood for election for the East Gippsland Shire Council. And in 2018...
I became the mayor, so I was the youngest mayor ever elected to East Gippsland Shire Council and the first from Omeo.
For 1 year, Natalie was the mayor, presiding over a massive region.
East Gippsland is huge, 20,000 square kilometres. So from one end of the Shire to the other, it's 3.5, 4-hour drive and you're still within the Shire.
We have 9 months of the year where it's absolutely brilliant. We have spring, autumn and beautifully cold winters. And then we have summers.
They're also the kind of community that knows bushfire. Captain Graham Simons has been involved with the Country Fire Authority, the CFA, for 38 years.
We're always aware that every summer there will be fires.
Omeo does have a long history with bushfires. 1939, those fires tore through the town and destroyed probably most of the buildings. In Omeo, the three-storey Golden Age building, which was just an absolutely amazing piece of architecture, just brought to the ground.
In 2003, the small Victorian town was hit by 2 firestorms that began in January and burned through to March.
I was 17. I was going into my year 12 at boarding school, but obviously I didn't go back right then when it happened. In 2003, we were very fortunate that we didn't lose. I think there might have been 1 house in town, but the rest were saved.
The 03 fires were very, very daunting, really. The problem with fires in our area is they seem to last for a long, long while.
Leonie Pendergast is 85 years old. She moved to the area when she was just 15, and over the 7 decades, she's seen a lot of bushfires. But the fires of 2003 are memorable.
They burnt basically in the mountains. Here, we had 2 firestorms. There's very few little towns survived 2 firestorms, but we did. Preparation, we could have won a tidy towns competition any old time. The busiest place in town was the rubbish tip. However, we managed to survive that.
I guess I never thought I would probably experience something of that magnitude again. Obviously, living in a landscape like we do, fire is a part of our life, and I think everyone up here is aware of that. But those fires like 2003 and again like 2020, you know, really are kind of once-in-a-lifetime type of experience.
The last 20 years has probably been more intense than the previous 20.
In late 2019, Leonie had felt the wind gathering strength.
was coming from the north. So we were getting that extremely hot, dry air, which was coming down. But don't forget, we had a very, very dry winter. So consequently, the parameters were there for a major, major fire.
The fires first started around the Tambo Crossing area in late November, and we were actually cut off from the rest of East Gippsland for probably 3 weeks before the fires hit on New Year's Eve.
On the 20th of November, we started fighting the fire in the forest. If you're going to have a fire, or if you're going to have any major disaster, be the first to have it, because then you get all the resources. As time goes by and there's other communities impacted, the resources are stretched. Up here, we probably had limited resources because about 60% of East Gippsland was burning. So resources had to be spread far and wide. From a CFA point of view, we still had crews going into New South Wales. So as a fire season, it was probably one of the most unusual.
We'd already had road closures on the Great Alpine Road mid-December. So living in Omeo, I'd already been disconnected from the rest of East Gippsland in some ways for weeks prior to the scenes that we're now familiar with across Mallacoota and Sarsfield. And then also seeing what they've gone through and then knowing what lay ahead of us as well, because, you know, that threat was around us as well. So devastating to see your whole region basically ablaze. We were still waiting for it to come to us.
This fire season, there was fires virtually all the way up the east coast, Queensland, New South Wales, around Canberra, and of course Victoria. So our fire season, even though it started early, it was still behind what was happening in New South Wales and Queensland. They'd already had fires. So for the fires to start on the 20th of November and go through was a bit unusual. We had been in 3 years of drought, so that probably contributed to the fact that through the lightning strikes they were going to get a hold.
It's a really awful feeling, and it's draining, it's tiring. And during this time, we were blanketed in smoke for weeks on end, so we didn't see daylight. Like, it was just depressing and just a very lonely and stressful time for people to just kind of sit and wait.
In my life, I've probably been through about five. And I always say, the next fire, I'm going to book a flash motel in Melbourne and I'm going to sit back on the bed drinking a glass of champagne and watching it on television. But of course, that never happens. I finish up walking around in my old clothes with buckets of water.
Anne Peterson runs an art gallery and museum on the main road of Omeo with her husband, Terry.
We live in a house that was built in 1878, which was the home of the first Catholic nuns in Omeo. So it's quite a big old timber place. So we stayed and defended. We were prepared to evacuate if we had to, but we're pretty well set up. After the 2003 fires, when the fires came into town twice, we set ourselves up with a fair bit of our own firefighting equipment, sprinklers on the roof and that sort of thing, and our own power generators.
She's our fur kid and the love of our lives. And she'll talk to you. Oh, you're not going to talk now? Oh, just going to wag your tail.
Jill and Dennis Reith-Miller have seen bushfires before, when they were living in the nation's capital.
We were in the big fires that went through Canberra in 2003. I lived out at Corindam in the ACT for 13 years, and there was several fires went through the national park out there. And as kids, the fire up the hill, you didn't worry about it. As long as your home was safe and your family and your kids, you know, your animals, that's all that mattered.
In 2007, they moved from Canberra to Omeo. With Tia, They're Jack Russell Maltese Shih Tzu cross with a tail that's always in motion.
Got sick of living in Canberra with all the noise. Nice, quiet, peaceful town, friendly place.
As the fire warnings increased in early January, Jill and Dennis had to make a decision.
With all the smoke and everything, our health was the main reason that we wanted to get out. We were worried about our home and about our friends and our neighbours. We have no family or anything here that we needed to worry about, so it was mainly just getting the three of us out.
A plan was set in motion. On Friday, January 3, Jill and Dennis would drive to safety.
It was on the Friday afternoon. We'd packed the car and we were going to go over Mount Hotham and up to Canberra to our kids. 5 minutes before we were ready to go, our next door neighbours rang and said the road's closed. So that was sort of the finish of that. About 10 o'clock that night, we got a phone call from fire people to say that Omeo was going to be engulfed in 2 hours. There was nowhere else to go, you know. We couldn't get out by road, so we went to the safest place where there was other people there with us.
I'm asthmatic, so consequently, we had been told, and the same in 03, to go up to the rec reserve.
Leonie's husband and son stayed in town, running the hardware store.
Absolutely flat out down to the hardware because people are wanting firefighting pumps, they're wanting all sorts of things. So Tony said to me, "You'll have to look after yourself, I'm too busy."
Leonie packed her evacuation bag and made her way to the recreation reserve.
And we had our lilacs on the floor, they had beds set up. So by this time, by late in the afternoon, things were really starting to get a little bit hairy. And Omeo was definitely under threat.
Jill and Dennis also found a space at the rec reserve with Tia.
Terrified. I thought, if we come all the way down here to live, left our families and everything to die in a fire. But I got over that. I didn't have much choice, you know, you just go with the flow. We went to where there was people who knew what they were doing, where we would be looked after as well as possibly could be. Did what we were told, sat where we were told.
People bunkered down. Jill and Dennis felt fairly safe from the flames.
30 years firefighting experience, and we've had some pretty good ones. It was more the smoke was the biggest thing for me. I was starting to feel a bit stressed out with that because I was worried about my heart. I've had coronary bypass surgery, and that was worrying me, and I know it was worrying Jill. We were worrying back and forth, as you do.
The rec reserve was obviously packed. There was probably 150, 200. There was a lot that retreated there. Everyone's got that Vic Emergency app on their phone, and every few minutes it just went ding, ding, ding. And, you know, everyone was just on edge every time that went off. What now? On the Friday night, we were anticipating the fire to come through. We were told at a community meeting that it would hit Omeo. It wasn't a matter of if, but it was a matter of when. And when that emergency app went off, evacuate now, emergency, it's going to hit Omeo. It's going to impact at 12 o'clock. And then, you know, so we're all waiting at 12, and then the alert changes and it's going to hit at 2, and then it's going to hit at 10. And then, you know, so this never-ending waiting game.
Latest update here from Swift's Creek. It is now quite dark. Plenty of patrolling going on in the town by police, Delp, and CFA.
National Radio News. Hello, I'm Shannon Kirkwood. Conditions are already deteriorating in Victoria's East Gippsland with winds picking up. There are 6 emergency warnings in place. Potential impact zones in the Gippsland region extend from Lakes Entrance to Mallacoota up through the Alpine region to Wangaratta and Albury-Wodonga.
North of Omeo Township. Strong northerly wind blowing.
The morning of Saturday, January 4 was dark. There was thick smoke. Flames could be seen in the distance, and embers were falling within the town borders.
Just start to see some spot fires up on the hill. It's really progressed in colour and severity.
An ember had landed about 500 metres from the hospital earlier, and on the Saturday, spent the day with the kids, with my mum, in her room at the hospital, because I knew that it was a safe place to be, but also because I wanted to be with my mum, because Dad was out fighting the fires. Being with her was important, and also making sure that the kids were okay. And my husband was working, making sure that the water was being kept up to the town. And so that was quite hard, not really knowing what was happening there. You're obviously listening on the radio, trying to find out what's happening. We were fortunate we didn't lose mobile reception, so I was able to keep in contact with Aaron. He could see what was happening and what the weather was doing, and you know, he could see the fire in the distance. Dad was at the hospital. He was on the truck there that was looking after the hospital, out doing the patrols.
Anne Peterson was out on Omeo's main street, patrolling her home and the gallery with Terry.
We had embers falling up at the manse where we live, but they were cold, they weren't hot, and we could actually see the fire burning. A lot of smoke, a lot of heat, a lot of fire trucks running around, a lot of buckets of water, just really a sense of being on edge all the time, just being a little bit unnerved. So that was probably the worst day.
Over at the Rec Reserve, word was flying through the people gathered there. There might be a way out of the town.
I was having trouble with the smoke, a lot of trouble with the smoke. And I have got family in Bairnsdale. So they made the announcement, if you're prepared to go, put your name down. And I thought, well, I might as well go to Bairnsdale. I've got family down there. There's a motel anywhere I can stay. So I thought, yes, if I can get to Bairnsdale, that's one person out of jail that they don't have to worry about.
But with the roads closed and fire surrounding the town, how would people leave?
Fire was getting a bit hot. Smoke was getting thicker and thicker. And then out of the smoke, a helicopter came in, Black Hawk. It landed and the crewmen got out and wandered over and talked to the SES people. And next thing you know, they were saying, if we wanted to be evacuated, we could go at any time.
In the hospital, it was Natalie's dad, Rod, who came in to let the family know about the evacuation.
So he said they're bringing in these helicopters up to the Rec Reserve to evacuate. At that point, we didn't know whether it was a compulsory evacuation or not. It was sort of a decision that you had to make, a split-second decision. Do I stay or do I go? Had to make that hard decision of, you know, leaving mum and dad behind at the hospital and my pop. And then I met Aaron up at the Rec Reserve. By that point, it was a bit of organised chaos. An unbelievable sight to see your local football ground with Black Hawk helicopters, Chinooks circling above, and just hundreds of people gathered around looking on and not knowing what was about to hit the town. Because all the reports that were coming through was that, you know, this big storm was headed their way. And obviously fire creates its own environment, its own weather patterns and systems, and the smoke was so thick, and just not knowing what was about to happen. And then to have these army helicopters turn up, I mean, I just thought that Armageddon was coming. You know, what else could you think? They're bringing all these army helicopters to evacuate a town because what was about to hit. Being a parent to 2 little kids, how could I stay?
It really is the best way to to evacuate an area because, don't forget, we had no roads.
So walking out onto the oval and holding my children's hands, oh my God, like leaving my family behind and, you know, my community that I love. They kitted the kids up with goggles and helmets and then we were on.
Someone took my hand and walked me over to the helicopter, helped me on board. They put your harness on, make sure you're right. But it was like old McDonald's farm because there were the dogs. We might have had the odd cats. There were oldies like me. There was one mum and kid.
As we got in, we sat down and Tia got a bit excited and Tia went straight up, right up as high, up to the ceiling of the chopper there, and I had to pull her back down. She was climbing right up.
And then finally we took off. It's very, very noisy. If you're claustrophobic, it would be a bit of a problem. I didn't feel the least bit nervous, not a scrap.
The ride to Bairnsdale took about half an hour. In typical Omeo fashion, those on board looked after each other.
There was two elderly ladies on the helicopter with us, and I was more concerned about them. But one was sitting next to Dennis, and Leonie was sitting sort of opposite, so I could see that she was all right. But I was more worried about them than I was about myself, because I had everything I needed. You know, I had Dennis and I had Tara.
You couldn't see the flames because the door was closed, but when they flew over the fire area, you could see the colour of the air outside. Because don't forget, we were in smoke, dead smoke. You couldn't see a damn thing. But when we were flying over the fire area, you could see it because this panel, you could look out, was pink.
The Black Hawks, they're pretty sparse inside, and there's only some small windows in there, but enough to see the sky change colour. So from the smoke when we took off and then the glow, it just got redder and redder as we went, and then all of a sudden it was just black and you couldn't see anything. And I was just thinking, what have we gone through then, you know? How do they know where to go? How do they know where we're going to land? And then the blackness passed and there's more of a smoky look, and then we landed in Bairnsdale. I could see the sky and I remember thinking, oh my God, that's what the sky looks like. Forgot.
38 residents and their pets were evacuated from Omeo by helicopter on January 4. Omeo had been smothered in smoke for weeks. Jill stepped off the helicopter in Bairnsdale and took
big deep breath with out smoke. There was no smoke when we landed, and it had been weeks since we'd had that sort of environment that you could get out and you could see and you could breathe.
They took our helmets and they helped us down off the helicopter, and walking with Leonie Pendergast, who she was evacuated on the same helicopter. It was nice to be able to be with someone you know and walk with them, and it gives you a little bit of reassurance.
I wouldn't have missed experience for the world. No one at 85 is going to invite you to come and hop on a Black Hawk.
The firestorm predicted to hit Omeo's main streets didn't eventuate. But in the surrounding area, locals lost properties, fencing, paddocks and livestock. The fires weren't immediately contained, and there was one fatality.
The fire, although it was up here, it was out there, it was all around us, it really kept out of the town. So we were extremely lucky we got the change in the weather when we did. Another week, 10 days of that hot weather, or we'd have been really gone.
It went on for so long. Started on the 20th of November, and still parts of it were probably burning early Feb. So, yeah, it's a fair while to have a community or the communities in a state of locked down for anything because we had roads closed and you couldn't get in, couldn't get out.
I think everybody's looking out for everybody else. Everybody feels great sympathy for those people who are impacted, especially the farmers. So there's lots of hugs down the street and lots of inquiring how people are and how they're going and offering to help if you can.
But now the events of the summer are being compounded by the current global pandemic.
Everyone was really getting behind their regional areas and supporting it. And so whilst, everyone had just been through the most traumatic summer, there was things to look forward to. And then with COVID hitting 6 weeks after the fire, it was just absolutely devastating.
And you hear about people still living in tents and caravans. So you wonder just how much financial support they've had. And I know it can be very difficult with insurance and things like that. But I really do think that the virus has virtually taken over and the people from the bushfire areas are probably being a little bit forgotten.
We're talking about a triple whammy: drought, then the bushfires, and now COVID. It's going to be hard to come back from that, definitely.
You've been listening to From the Embers. This series has been brought to you by the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia and is supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute for Journalism and Ideas and the Paul Ramsey Foundation. Our guests were Natalie O'Connell, Leonie Pendergast, Anne Peterson, Dennis and Jill Reithmiller, and Graham Simons. Thank you to Maureen Webb, Damien Pendergast, Brad Watterson, Sue Agnew, 3HCR Community Radio Station, Ambulance Victoria, and the Omeo Community. The producer was Anne Wall. Engineering by Tegan Nichols. Script consultation from Zoe Ferguson. Theme by Oliver Beard. Assistance from Lisa Burns and Alice Ansara. The production management team was Vicky Rouse and Abe Killian.
And the executive producer was Sarah Mashman.
This episode was made on the land of the Kaurnai Kurnai people and the Muwinina people from country around Nipaluna. These lands were never ceded.